and welcome to Cyber Therapy. My name is Ashley. I'm your host, Senior Marketing Manager at Jupiter One. And my co-host is...
Hey, everybody. Tyler Shields. That's me. Yes. Co-host, Cyber Therapy, CMO, Jupiter One. Thank you, Ashley, for the introduction.
Yeah. If you're new here, welcome. This is where we get to talk to tech and security professionals, get to know a little about the human behind the tech. And today we've got an awesome guest, super excited to chat with her about what we've had planned. But first, I just want to let you know, we stream first and third Tuesdays of every month. And so definitely follow us on LinkedIn, like us on YouTube, hit that notification and subscription button. Or, you know, if you're on Twitch, which we don't have many Twitch followers, but if you are on Twitch, definitely subscribe to our channel as well. We also have another show called 100X Engineering that airs on the second and fourth Tuesday of every month. So it alternates between this show and that one.
That's a whole lot of math there.
It is. Just first, every Tuesday around this time, you'll get some good content here.
So. Yeah, and definitely smash that like button. Smash that subscribe button. Click that notify bell. You got to do all
there
the things
it,
that the young
way,
kids say.
This way.
It's
this
that way. Way. There. It's somewhere around here. I never know where it is. I leave that for the post-production team, the wonderful yes. Tyler P to take care of. He magically puts a bell wherever I point my finger. No, he doesn't. But in reality, please definitely do hit the like, subscribe, bell, notify. If you like the content, that's one way to get notified of it when it comes out, when we go live, and when it's when the recorded stuff is uploaded. But also, it helps us, right? The more we have followers, the more we have people showing that they support what we do, the more we're going to do this, the more we're going to put out cool content for you guys to consume and hopefully find valuable.
Yeah. So can you believe it? It is August. We've been doing this. Let's see. Last episode, we talked about Midsummer Reflection. It was mid-July. August is usually the month that a lot of people plan travel because it's right before school starts and all that stuff. So I was wondering, do you have travel plans coming up?
No.
For business and for leisure.
Oh, well, for business. Yeah, I'm going to Black Hat next week. So I'll be in Vegas Monday through Friday next week. Yeah, like a degenerate. But no, I'll be there Monday through Friday next week. So if anybody wants to connect and talk about anything cybersecurity related, please definitely look me up, TXS on Twitter. Happy to make the connection and happy to get coffee, drinks, beers, whatever you guys enjoy doing down there in Vegas. I don't think I have too many other trips coming up the remainder of this year. I know I'm coming back for reInvent. I'll be in Vegas for reInvent as well. But that's not till December. I think I've got a pretty light load. How about you?
I will be in Vegas as well. Really looking forward to being at B-Sides and Vegas and Black Hat with everybody.
And this will be your first B-Sides, correct?
Yes, this will be the first time where I'm experiencing more of Summer Hacker Camp. So normally, traditionally, I've been on the event side and literally only show up for Black Hat Expo hours and that's it. But this time I get to go in a different fashion, which I'm super excited about, getting to talk to a lot of people and just meet folks on the strip.
Yeah, so I want to throw this out there to anybody watching, anybody that watches this before Hacker Summer Camp starts next week. Reach out to Ash. Introduce yourself to Ash. She's super fun. I'll even give her permission to buy a round here or there so that she can actually pay for a couple of drinks and some coffees. But take her around. You know, this is going to be her first experience outside of some of the normal Black Hat events. And, you know, to hit up B-Sides and to meet maybe some of the folks that might know me from decades ago. And definitely hit her up and take her to some fun things and events and show her what... you know, the hospitality of the hacker culture.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I really, really appreciate
it. And nobody's going to do it because I don't really have that many friends, but I wanted to pretend. So it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. So other than Vegas, though, I'm planning to fly into Raleigh to see you and the team because we've got our team on site coming up. I'm also going to the Bay Area for a friend's wedding and planning an anniversary trip with my husband. It's the sixth anniversary. So nothing super special, but it's an anniversary. So it'll be fun.
Yeah. My wife's birthday is in 2 days. I still haven't bought her anything.
You're so thoughtful, Tyler.
Yeah. I pretty much am going to fail, I think, this week. So we'll find out. But, I don't want to wait too much longer because you guys don't know this, but there's a green room on the side of the screen when we're doing this live and I can actually see a slightly tinted out version of our guest in the green room. And she keeps laughing at this stuff. Like, she has these snarky comments. I can already tell that she has snarky comments to say to me about how poorly I'm executing as a husband for my wife this week. But yeah, she's nodding her head. You can't see it, but she's like, yes, that's correct. You're a jerk. Let's bring her in here so that we can actually get those snarky comments right out in the open for everybody to laugh at.
Well, hello. I'm welcome. So glad.
Yes, this is Chrissy Safi, everyone. I hope I said that correctly. Yes.
That's right. Yeah. Perfect.
Managing Director of the Offensive Security Team at Protiviti. So really, really glad to have you here. And thank you to Erkong for nudging her our way and us getting introduced at the Cybersecurity Denver event. So glad that you're here.
Yay, thank you. I'm so glad to be here too. Thanks for having me.
So where do we want to start? Do we want to start with getting her origin story? Because I love getting some origin stories here.
Yeah, let's dig in. So it's funny, you know, usually when we're doing the prep calls for these things, I connect with the audience, and the ones that I connect with on a really good background level, having done similar things in our lives, are typically guests that I've sourced because I've known them for a long time and they come from my history. But Chrissy and I think, connected pretty good on a historical level too. We came up through similar ranks, different companies, but same era. It's kind of cool. Why don't you talk a little bit about your origin story? Let's start with some of the technical kind of, like, if you're going to give us a TLDR of the companies you worked at, let's start there. Okay. And then we might switch into some of the personal whys and where you come from and all that stuff later.
Cool. Yeah, sounds good. Although I might have to call you out on the same era. Man, that makes me feel old. But.
Oh, ouch, ouch. I'm using broad strokes there, okay?
I'm kidding. 15-year windows. Yes. No. Yeah, so companies I've worked for, how this all came to be. Well, let's see. It's kind of a crazy journey, really. I started my journey at IBM as an intern or a co-op and fell into the pen testing world and stayed with IBM for about a decade. And then I left to go work for the US government and was working in DC and also traveling the world, working at embassies across the world, mostly in Asia. And then Latha recruited me back to IBM to work on offering and product development. And so I went to do that. And then I got recruited for this amazing opportunity at Protiviti to be the global attack and penetration practice leader and a managing director. So that's like the super short story.
Yeah. So take me back to the first one. You fell into it. How do you fall into it? Like what specifically happened that allowed you to make that connection and get into the offensive security world? Because it's not, you know, it's funny, people of my era and then the 10 years later when you started era, the folks that have been around as long as we have, most of us either just kind of followed it because we always thought it was cool, or we fell into it because somebody needed something. What drew you into it? Hello?
Yeah. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we must have had a little blip there. Blip in the matrix. We can hear you fine. Can you hear us?
Okay. All right, good. Yep, it's coming through. Okay. Yeah, so how did it start? So I applied for colleges as a math major. So I really like numbers and things like that. But then I got into school and was like, oh, maybe not math. And so I just started taking some Italian classes for fun and some biology classes. And I just could not cut it in biology. I just couldn't pass organic chemistry. And, you know, I was sitting down with my lab TA. And am I coming through okay? Are we still getting drops in the matrix here? Okay, good. Cool. And I was sitting down with my lab teacher's assistant in my biology class, and he was like, you know, I don't know if biology is really your thing, Chrissy, but, you know, you're always fixing the computers in our lab when they break, and maybe you should think about a career in, like, computers, doing something with computers. And I was like, yeah, well, I do have a little bit of experience with that. And, you know, I grew up I had a computer when I was like in sixth grade or so, and I got introduced to America Online through these CDs that we would get in the mail. And I started kind of dabbling in that and hanging out in chat rooms and ended up getting connected with other people trying creative things, I'll say.
There it is. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And, you know, so I thought back to that time and I was like, maybe I should be doing something with computers. And so I applied for an internship with IBM, and it was to do workstation security auditing. So this was, you know, back in the early 2000s. I would literally go around from desk to desk to desk at a huge IBM facility in Boulder, Colorado, 9,000 employees. And I would come up with my notepad and my pen, and I would say, step away from your computer. I need to check your settings. And they would be like, oh, okay. And they'd roll back in their desk, and I'd take over and, oh, you know, check if they had a power on password and a hard drive password, and were their Lotus Notes databases encrypted and all that stuff. And it was fun. I got to meet a ton of people. It was like the best job from a networking perspective ever. And then I ended up auditing the pen testing group and, you know, was talking with the team and shared a little bit of my, you know, other activities and my interests and creativity. And they were like, well, just come to your internship over here. That'd be great. And so I switched and I loved it. And the man that was leading the team at the time, he was like, hey, I just need you to get an undergrad degree. I don't care what it's in, and we'll hire you. And so I went back to my counselor at, I went to University of Colorado at Boulder. And I was like, okay, what's my quickest way out of school? I've got a job. I just have to have a degree. And she was like, well, I mean, you've accrued enough credits in Italian. You get a degree in Italian. Because I also did
abroad
and took courses there. And yeah, so I graduated with a degree in Italian. IBM hired me onto the pen testing team. And it all just kind of went from there. So I'd never had any, you know, formal training, like university-wise. It was all on the job at IBM starting there.
And that Italian, do you think the language ended up leading to your involvement in governmental related type things later on in your career?
I mean, they liked that I had Italian, and I think I got paid some kind of bonus for having a language proficiency there. But no, I focused on Asia specifically, so didn't really come in very handy there.
Gotcha. Okay. Ash, do you have any questions you want to run through there starting in the early days?
Not really. I mean, you've pretty much covered the stuff that I have a
follow-on question. I'll just keep on rolling. Okay. I always, part of the problem is I always tend to overrun Ash. So I always try to give her the opportunity to get her two words in. And sometimes I stump her. But So IBM, you were there how long?
I was there for 10 years, the first.
Unheard of. Oh, so the first time. So you went back.
Yeah,
and so that is unheard of in today's in today's world. What specifically kept you at IBM? Because if you talk to people today, they'll always still say things like, you know, you got to hop frequently to get your biggest pay bumps. You got, you know, you want to make sure that you're connected with the coolest technology or whatever. Was there something specific about your experience at IBM that you're like, hey, this was just very powerful, and this was helping me learn X or learn Y throughout my decade of involvement there?
Yeah. So, you know, IBM, in case you didn't know, is a very large company. I mean, a lot of people haven't heard of it, but it is. And they do a lot of different things. Surprise. So when, you know, I had decided that pen testing even wasn't my thing, you know, the person I was working for was like, hey, well, you know, we have this other thing that I'm spinning up to be a security advisor. And so I was like, okay, cool. And that allowed me to get out and travel and see clients and work with them and even go do, what did you call it? Degenerate things, like go to Black Hat. And so I did that for a while. And then, you know, when I kind of started to be like, okay, you know, I wonder what's next, you know, somebody would tap me and be like, hey, do you want to come over here to this different part of IBM? I'm all in security though, and do this thing. And so I would follow that person. So a lot of my career was following other people that asked me to come with them to try something new. And so given, you know, the opportunities or the size of IBM, there were just these opportunities there that I didn't have to change companies to get them. They were all just available to me there.
So in many ways, you were able to chase opportunities to chase different things, but all within a single employer.
Yeah, I mean, I had multiple jobs. You know, if you look at my LinkedIn or my resume, you know, you see like multiple jobs that I've had at IBM. But yeah, it was almost like I was changing companies though, because I got different new experiences.
So I'm gonna double click on something you said, and it's gonna out you potentially for age. So I'm gonna be careful how I approach this. Which was your first DEF CON that you attended?
Oh gosh, I don't even remember. I can probably tell you what the badge looked like, but
you don't remember?
It was probably in 2004 era was my first one. That was when I was like a professional, and I remember going with one of my clients, and you know, it's kind of, they were like teaching me the ropes.
And what was your so since we're going into the week of Hacker Summer Camp next week, right? And for those in the audience don't know what Ashley and I are referring to when we call it Hacker Summer Camp, every week in the summer you have B-Sides conference followed by Black Hat conference followed by DEF CON conference, all within 1 week in Las Vegas. And it's generally like Sunday to Sunday or something like that, runs 7 days. Do you remember anything specific stand out to you about what you learned in those early years of going to DEF CON, preferably, or Black Hat, but certainly DEF CON early on? Was there anything that you were like, you know, this just floored me that this worked this way, or, you know, I got to meet these really cool people, or what stands out to you as memories of early DEF CON?
Yeah, a lot of things actually. So the lines actually was one of the things. The lines are kind of crazy there. So that seemed to have, you know, stayed in my brain. But I also liked the ones around social engineering. So if you remember, they used to do that thing where they would put somebody in like a phone booth thing and try to like social engineer someone on the other end. That was always amazing to me. And, you know, that when I like talk about what I do, whether it's to clients or to, you know, others, the, you know, folks that I mentor and such, and I get to talk about the experience of being a hacker, what it's like to be a hacker. My favorite stories are always those social engineering ones, because everyone's like, what? You did what? How did you do that? You know, so that. And then they also, this first year that I was there, back in, you know, early 2000s, they did, and I can't remember if they do it anymore, but Spot the Fed.
They've been doing that since day one.
Okay. All right. So I was in one of those Spot the Fed talks. And of course, you know, I was called out. I was like, what? Like, just because I'm not like a dude? I don't know what it was.
But I was like, that could have been it back then.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's very few women there. So, but yeah.
Hold on. Let's rewind a little bit. Social engineering stories. I got to hear at least one. Give me one of the best stories that you've got there.
The best stories. I don't remember the story specifically there, but I mean, I've got stories here, you know, in my like real job now that happen like every day, you know, like this week, last week, things like that. So, but one of my favorite ones that, one of my folks at, a prior company did. And so this is one of the things too, like when you get to my level two, you have to live vicariously through everybody. So I don't have a lot of these experiences myself anymore, which sometimes makes me really sad, but I love to hear the stories. And so I always ask my team when they're out doing physical on-site social engineering gigs to like send me pictures or tell me stories, because it's just awesome. Like last week, one of my teammates, he got a rental car, and they were like, oh, we're going to upgrade you. And he ended up getting an orange like Dodge Ram or whatever, an orange charger. I was like, I hope you traded that in. I mean, you can't go do like a social engineering job in the right.
Yeah, it's real subtle.
Yeah, and he didn't. And so then we got pictures from the security team of the client, and they're like, "Is this you?" Like, oh my god! So the next day, he went and traded his car in. But one of my favorite ones that my team told me, and I, like, it's kind of, I don't know, sometimes like I feel bad, right? Because like we're trying to take advantage of like human nature. But this woman that I worked with, she was doing a physical on-site assessment. The goal was to gain access to the internal network. And so she went to this building and she was like, you know, I'm here for so-and-so. And, you know, don't worry, they'll be down in just a minute to let me in. They're like, okay. And so she's sitting there in the waiting room, you know, waiting for this person to come. And she like starts to like act like she's uncomfortable. And she goes over to the front desk security person, and it's a woman. And she was like, I'm pregnant and I'm not feeling very good. Could you give me access to the bathroom? Like I am all of a sudden like really nauseous. And of course the woman was like, yeah, of course. Yeah. Let me just buzz you into the store. And so she buzzes her in, she goes into the bathroom, goes up the elevator, goes and does her thing, gains access to the internal network. And then, you know, the gig is up.
And wow.
Back in my day, I tried a similar technique. It didn't work so good.
No. I can imagine. But it's so sad because like this person was just trying to be helpful, right? But like, you just have to like follow the policies, sadly.
Yeah, that you're putting that person into a very difficult spot, which makes them potentially make a very incorrect decision for the security of the business. But so back in that window, so you were there for 10 years. You eventually left, went over to work for the State Department for a while. Okay. Came back, and we'll go back to the State Department. We'll drill in on that in a little bit. But you came back to help grow IBM's X-Force team. I know a lot of the folks at the OG X-Force, original X-Force back in the day. That was kind of my era, right before yours. But tell us a little bit about what it was like growing that team versus a team that you've built now and are building now at your current company, Protiviti. Is there differences? Are people still the same? Are the techniques still the same? Is there a new level of depth or breadth that people have to be successful in that type of organization?
Yeah, I mean, that's like kind of really interesting to dive into because there actually are differences and some that, you know, I can only really look back on now and, you know, tell you, you know, like being part of IBM, again, that tiny little company, it was a lot easier to recruit people because people knew IBM. A lot of people in security haven't heard of Protiviti. Protiviti security was not Protiviti's bread and butter. Protiviti was born out of internal audit and, you know, and risk and compliance, that kind of work. And so, you know, there's always been a security arm and there's always been attack and pen, we call it. But, you know, even when I was leaving IBM, I had never heard of Protiviti. So it took a lot of, you know, kind of digging into that. But, you know, if you do, you'll see, you know, we're like rated top for all of the, you know, Forbes and Consulting Magazine and the best places to work for women and things like that. So, you know, we're a really, really wonderful company, but we just don't have the name out there like an IBM does. And, you know, prior to X-Force Red, which X-Force Red as a brand was only established in probably, I want to say 2014, so probably like 2015, 2016. So it's like, it's relatively new, but we piggybacked on the X-Force brand itself that had so much like street cred, you know, in the market. So building a team there was a little easier because of that. You know, people wanted to work for X-Force and they heard it was X-Force Red. And then we had some really big names also that worked for the team. So like Major Malfunction is one that's like coming to my mind right now. You know, he's a quartermaster for DEF CON. And, you know, people are like, oh, cool, I can work with, you know, Major. Awesome. You know, and so there was a bunch of other folks like that too that, you know, have kind of that street cred too. And people are like, oh, cool, I want to work with that person. So it was a lot easier in that regard. And then, you know, Protiviti, like I have to tackle it from a different perspective, you know, different ways of recruiting, different ways of retaining.
yeah, that's my dog saying hello. We can
get that. He likes that. He likes that. He agrees. Or she. So that was like a really big difference, just like kind of like the brand And so, you know, one of the things I'm working with in Protivity is actually to expand that brand recognition and, you know, use that as a recruiting and retention point.
So I want to ask a question, Ash. I got one more and then I'll kick to you. Yeah. I do have one more question because she brought up something that I think most viewers will probably understand. But in the rare chance that we don't get someone with a hacker background, you said this person was named Major Malfunction.
Yeah. You know?
Now I actually know that person.
Okay.
That's his hacker handle. What did you ever have a hacker handle back in your day?
I was waiting for you to ask this one.
You know it was coming up.
I did, and I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right. So mine is Sapphire. So it's Safire. So it's a little bit of a play on my last name. So my last name is Safi, Safi. And so then I just added an R-E onto the end of it.
That makes
sense. Sounds cool. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like a total no-brainer one. Mine's really dumb compared to that.
Okay.
Like really. I might have to go kill my dogs though in the meantime.
Don't do that. Yeah, I mean, unless you haven't updated your Chrome, then that would be a dead puppy right there by our standard.
So our CISO Sunil Yu says that if he ever sees you sharing your screen and it has the Chrome update button lit red, it kills puppies. So that's the running joke. Every time you are sharing with a red update button, you're killing puppies. No, I would never actually hurt my puppies, but I am getting pretty frustrated that no one in my house, family of four, is getting them to quiet, knowing I'm doing a live podcast. My hacker handle started in middle school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that's where it comes from. I used to play beach volleyball. I used to play college volleyball. I was a college athlete playing college volleyball, playing beach in the summers, right? Mm-hmm. And I had a t-shirt that was a cartoon drawing on the back of like these crocodiles playing volleyball. And it had a snarky, you know, sentence or something on it. I don't remember what it said, but when you were first coming up in like eighth or ninth grade, coming into the beach volleyball circuit where like 20-year-olds are playing, they were like, you know, hey kid, go get the ball. Like you were just told what to do. And so I had that t-shirt on playing one day at the beach and they said, hey, crocodile, go get the ball.
Okay,
and so when I was connecting up and logging into bulletin board systems for the first time in middle school, this was pre-internet.
Yeah.
I wanted to use the crocodile as my handle,
okay,
but it was capped at 8 characters and that was too long. So I shortened it to T-Croc, T-C-R-O-C. And that became my hacker handle throughout, probably into my at least mid 20s before I threw it out and started using just my initials, which are TXS.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So that's my hacker handle story.
That's good. That's a better story than mine. I like it.
I don't know. It's kind of a dumb story. I feel almost embarrassed talking about like middle school, but that's where it came from.
Yeah. Well, what's
imagine.
Is your middle name start with an X?
No. And I don't know if I should say, I have a running joke with that too. I bet people money that they can't guess my middle name.
Okay.
And I'll give them a certain number of guesses and I'll even say it starts with, or, you know, I'll say my initials are TXS. I don't have a middle name.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a trick. Yeah. It's a bit of a trick I use, but so no, I don't have a middle name. And then in college, they used, believe it or not, back when I went to college, they used your initials and the last four of your social security number as your username. When I went to undergrad. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Like TXS 1234. Yes. Just like that.
Okay.
That was your username.
That was
also your email address. So it was TXS 1234 at RIT.edu where I went to undergrad. I'm pretty sure they've gotten away with that.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Yeah. RIT definitely has.
Yeah. Back in the day, they were not very smart with the security side of it, but, no, so that's my hacker story. I do want to double click on some of the X-Force stuff a little bit more because I always find it intriguing, right? I know I grew up with the early X-Force. You grew up with the second generation X-Force.
Yeah.
Do you think there's been in your career, you know, going back to the early mid 2000s, 2005 era when you started to now, has there been like a massive change operationally in what gets done? Like you know, originally it was all about Nmap, you know, Nmap things, Nikto things, find, run a handful of scanners, get your results, jam it into a PDF, kick it off, right?
Yes.
That's changed quite a bit, right?
Yes. Yes. Thank goodness. So, you know, I mentioned that I kind of got tired of, or, you know, I was kind of done with pen testing in my early years when I started IBM after a while, because like, that's what it was. And it was like kind of boring. Like there's all these rules, you know, don't break anything and you can only do these basic things. And, you know, and then they'd be like, and we're probably never going to remediate them anyway. So, you know, you're just like, what am I doing? Like I'm wasting my
time. That's really encouraging.
Yeah. Right. Like that's how it was. And so, you know, then we started to definitely see like, you know, increased traction and like people actually needing pen testing. But a lot of it was like for kind of check the box, like compliance reasons, you know, certain regulations requiring it. And so people still not caring so much about the remediation aspects. And so, you know, I went through a period of where like it was tough because like I wanted that closed loop, you know, like we find the things, let's fix the things. But now, you know, what I see with my clients and, you know, the work that my team is doing, a lot of it is very closed loop. So, you know, the methodologies are way more mature and, you know, there's a lot of like leeway because it's like test like the bad guys, right? Like if you put all these limits and put you in a box and things like that, then you aren't giving your clients the real picture of, you know, their exposures or their vulnerabilities of how, you know, a bad guy could, you know, take advantage of them. So I appreciate that. And then we also do a lot of remediation testing too, to like, they say, okay, we fixed these things. Can you go back in and just make sure that, you know, you see that they're actually fixed and that, you know, a criminal couldn't take advantage of those. So it's kind of reached the like Zen time for me. Like, you know, it's like, it's like kind of closed loop now in most cases.
So Ash, I want you to ask the next question. However, I'm going to put Big Head Tyler in this seat because I did the cardinal sin and didn't plug my computer in before we started this. So I'm about to die. Yeah, I know, right? Live show. This is the first time in 20 episodes I've done something so stupid. But Big Head Tyler is going to take my spot while you go ahead and ask the next question. I run and get my charger.
See you, Jinx, in the beginning.
Totally. Mister, it's been 20 episodes and we haven't had a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I have multiple questions. So we'll start with the first question I was thinking of. When you are talking to clients, what's been the most challenging thing to kind of move remediation along? Like, have you had to really talk through and examine business impact and like how does that get how does it get like measured and talked about, I guess?
Yeah, for sure. So in the way that we do reporting, we have a section for impact. And you know, a lot of that is a discussion with the client, you know, kind of whoever the buyer is. And you know, sometimes we do a lot of pen testing work for our audit clients and things like that. So you know, I think that's really valuable. And a lot of clients like to collaborate with us on that because you oftentimes what you see is they're then taking that report to, you know, a person above them that's going to provide them the money to implement the new thing, or fix the thing, or take it to their board who's then going to approve the funds for, you know, the thing to fix the issue and such. Yeah. So yeah, that I love that. So I do a lot of presenting to boards and to audit committees for that reason, to like help them. Like they want to have us come as the experts and talk about, you know, the impacts and what we found and why it's important to fix these things, because, you know, boards are getting smarter and smarter for sure. But they're, you know, having a long time of having a gap in that security knowledge. And so us being able to explain that in a way that, you know, they understand, which is the business impact and, you know, how it's going to affect stakeholders and things like that, is like become very, very important. And it's probably my favorite part.
How did you develop that skill? Because it is a skill to be able to basically translate it right into business lingo. So,
I mean, I say like a lot of practice, but I also remember back in my first time at IBM, they offered this executive briefing training, and it was in Atlanta at the EBC, the Executive Briefing Center that they have there. And, you know, I was selected to do this, and, you know, we just, all we had to do was talk about ourselves for like 5 minutes or something, and they would video it and record it. And then you'd watch yourself play back in that. And you like, one of the things I used to do, and now I'm like super cognizant of it, and I have been for like 15 years now, is I used to go, I used to like talk and then be, and I'm like, I have to stop doing that. It's so annoying. So, and like hand movements, you would think I was Italian because I really do like to talk with my hands a lot, but you know, I've learned to kind of manage that. But I think just, you know, a lot of practice, and, you know, I feel like it's one of my, superpowers, if you will, that I can do that. And I don't really have like a process that I went through. It just is maybe like a superpower that I have, or a gift that I have, to be able to translate that technical jargon into things that executives can understand, and then vice versa. And I think that's what makes me successful.
Do you think going back to school and doing your MBA helped you round out that skill set, or was that something you would have gotten on your own?
The presenting part and like the technical back and forth, I think I would have gotten on my own. But the business school side of it really helped me round out the skills to run a business. So, you know, I run this practice. I am responsible for the revenue. I am responsible for the contribution margin. So, you know, what margins were coming in and out, the rates that, you know, were putting in place, and what we're getting on our projects, and, you know, just really the whole P&L and the business, and, you know, being able to like understand, you know, on earnings calls too, you know, what our CEO is saying, and, you know, translate that to my team. And, you know, like tomorrow I have an all hands call with my team, and, you know, I talk to them about the financials in a way that they understand and care about too, which I think, you know, a lot of that has been experience, but a lot of it really helped from getting my MBA.
Do you think that gives you a leg up in cybersecurity, or is this kind of just like this gives you the ability? It wouldn't matter if it was cybersecurity or you know, building some other startup, or like, I guess where I'm going with this question is, I hear a lot of younger people say, I don't need to get a degree. I can go into cybersecurity and I can hack stuff, and I can, you know, and you can't to a degree. Mm-hmm. But you and I both decided to go back and get further education. I did master's of computer science followed by an MBA. So I went back two times, which is even crazier in my head. But, you know, I think, do you think that lends itself to a person that can answer questions at a different level or be more well-rounded than if they just did one or did no degree at all?
Yeah. I mean, it's probably like a faster way. I think that people can get that experience as long as they're exposed to it. So if they have good like mentors and advisors and they're stepping up for those opportunities to help, like, you know, I have to do an ROI for a particular tool that I'm looking to buy for my team, not me personally. And, you know, I have the data, but it needs to be like kind of crunched in a little bit of a different way. And so I reached out to some of my like consultants that have been in consulting now for one-ish years and said, hey, you guys want to help me with this? Like, this is an opportunity for you to, I'm going to give you the data. I'll hold your hand a little if you want me to, but why don't you figure it out and then we'll review it. And then, hey, I'd love for you to present this to, you know, the two levels above me, my boss and my boss's boss. So, you know, I personally am trying to do those things for the next generations or the younger folks on my team that are just starting their careers, some that don't have college degrees. Like, I think it's really important that we've made that transition, at least at Protivity, of not requiring college degrees in some of our spaces, including pen testing, because we're really focused on, you know, what are the other experiences that is somebody bringing to the table, you know, trying to diversify people's backgrounds and, you know, cultures and experiences, rather than just like, I got a 4-year degree from, you know, some, you name it, school.
Yeah. I always struggle with the question myself, right? Cause I don't think there's a very clear answer to that, because I mean, it took me 8 years to get my undergrad. I barely graduated, like graduated with a 2.01 GPA in undergrad. I barely made it through, right? But yeah. I ended up getting a job in Silicon Valley in the .com days before I had even graduated. Yeah. You know, you didn't have a degree. They're like, hey, yeah, come in and be our security guy. And it's like, you know, had somebody not given me that chance, it wouldn't have set my ball in motion, my path in motion, right? And just so happens I ended up personally choosing to go back, but I don't think you have to be successful. It's just how you define success and what makes you happy as a person, and then matching those two things together, right? So it's a difficult question to say one path is better than the other.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like in hindsight, I'm glad that I have both my undergrad and my MBA, just in case like that could be like a job limiting thing. I think it's pretty new that some companies aren't requiring an undergrad degree. But I remember when I was in my, it took me 4.5 years to graduate, so don't feel too bad. Cause I just couldn't figure out.
What are you saying? My God.
I had the opportunity to work for a startup in Boulder. It was, you know, a .com kind of company too. And my aunt, she lives here in Boulder and she owns a biotech consulting company. And she was like, and they were like enticing me with the money, right? They're like, ah, this money, you know, you just quit going to school and come work for us. You don't need a degree. We'll teach you everything you need to know. We'll pay you a bunch. I was very tempted. You know, but my aunt was like, no, you need to go finish your undergrad because you might.
Yeah, I went and did it. I jumped right into the deep end of that stupid pool. Yeah, yeah, whatever. Let's go. I'll be fine. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I don't know what that path could have turned out to be. I mean, maybe I would have been a bajillionaire. It didn't matter if I had a degree or not, but.
You never know.
Yeah, never know.
That's a tough thing.
Yeah, but I like my happy. I feel successful. I've defined my successes.
Hey, you know, we can get into what makes happiness and all of those things, which I think is a totally different discussion. But Ash, I think you had another question you had queued up.
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm curious about is what have you learned that excites your team and keeps them engaged? Because insecurity, burnout is it's talked about a lot now. And it's pretty prevalent. So I'm just curious in, you know, growing the team at IBM and then also here at Protivity, like what have you learned to keep your team engaged and happy and full of life, right?
I will sound like him.
I just wanted to see how long you guys could maintain a conscious train of thought.
Big
head Tyler.
Well, I failed. Sorry. So what I've learned through the many years of, you know, managing people, working with people is that really everybody's different and different, you know, people have different things that make them tick. And I am very much a people person. Like I want to get to know every single person on my team and, you know, what is it that's important to them? And how do I fulfill that need? So some people it's money. And, you know, they're very clear, like, I don't really care what I'm doing as long as I'm doing, you know, pen testing and you're paying me well. Like, I'll just keep chugging away at that. I've got plenty of those kinds of people. And so, like, I know that. But, you know, other people want more than that. And, you know, I've had people leave, even though, like, I've countered them with, like, a bunch of money. Please stay. Take all this money. And they're like, well, I'm just looking for, you know, something different. I don't know if pen testing is for me. And, you know, I want to try this other thing. And so, you know, so aside from me, like knowing my people and knowing what makes them tick, I also started a task force called the People First Task Force. And it's a group of folks that really care about people and, you know, are very similar to me. And we work on initiatives together that are targeted at kind of filling everybody's little need, you know, scratching everybody's itch. So is it having more opportunities to present? Okay, we can do that. Is it having more opportunities to learn? So lunch and learns. And so we've got a whole lunch and learn program. Is it having research time? Like, do they feel like they're just hammering away, pen testing, doing client work all the time, but they really want to focus on a particular thing of interest to them? So, okay, let me give you, you know, 2 weeks or whatever amount of time you think you need to do this research thing. And hey, what if we could like make a con talk out of it? You know, like we'll present it. A Black Hat, a DEF CON, something like that. And we've done those things. So, I mean, I could go on and on with some of the initiatives and things like that that I find that makes people tick, but it really like it really is individualized or by individual. And I try to like individualize like my approach to keeping people happy.
And that changes over time, right? If you're at a company for 10 years, that could change very drastically from day one until, you know, that 10th year.
Boom. You got it. Yep. So true.
Ashley, we're at 45 minutes of show. Yep. Do we want to squeeze in more questions or do we want to hop over to the game now? What do you think?
I want to do one last question. Just
That's
because I'm
totally allowed. Kids. Go for it.
So how do you inspire the next generation of folks to be curious and to want to pursue offensive security or just security in general? Like there's different pockets, right?
Yeah. So this is like a huge passion of mine. Like I just told you all about how I'm a people person and I really care about my people and I want to know my people. I like to talk to anyone that'll listen about what it is that I do, no matter how old they are, or young they are. And, so I do like a few different things. So with Protivity, I'm involved with, you know, I mentor, a lot of people in and out of my practice to like kind of teach them about, you know, various things. It doesn't have to be about pen testing. It can be about, you know, what are the pitfalls that, you know, I've stumbled on or what are the like successes and why did that happen? But I also, when I was at IBM had a partnership with, a community college and a high school, a local high school up in Longmont, Ashley. And, it was called P-Tech. And we started with these kids when they were in middle school and went all the way through high school. And us IBM folks were mentors and they got a summer internship their junior year. And then IBM hired many of them after they finished their senior year of high school. And when they graduated from high school, they also had a 2-year associate's already under their belt too. And like one of the girls that I was mentoring, like never crossed her mind about security, but you know, I would talk to her about it and like the cool things we were doing. I got her an internship and really just tried to be the like, see it to be it and really like talk about it. And so that's, you know, that's one of the things that I do, but you know, speaking of RIT, I didn't know you went to RIT, Tyler, but, I was a keynote and a role player in CPTC, which is the collegiate pen testing competition. And so, you know, I still talk to a lot of those college students and one of them just a few months ago joined my team, cause we've just kept in touch and, you know, things like that. So, you know, that's just like a little glimpse, but yeah, I love it. And I love, you know, I always encourage people in or outside of my company, LinkedIn, whatever, like when I do podcasts or other conference talks, like reach out to me. I will always make time to talk about what it is that, you know, I do or what my story is.
Yeah. I'm going to come work for you. If you're hiring, let me know.
Me too.
You seem like you would be the coolest boss ever. So count me in.
I just feel like I could learn so much. Thank you. So, yeah.
You know, it's funny. I'm technically her boss and she never says that to me.
Yeah, because who's the one who's coming up with ideas on this call? Come on.
That's fact.
No, he's a great boss.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Okay. So I think, unless you have a question, Tyler.
Nope.
You want to go over the game?
I don't know what it is.
Today's game is Would You Rather. So not a competitive game, just more to get to know everybody on this call. And we're doing a Would You Rather travel edition.
Yay.
Because... Stay on my couch and not travel.
Okay. Good to know.
Is that qualified? Actually,
yes. Well, I mean, we learned this last
week. We did
time,
learn that last week,
last week, normally I'm the one coming up with the game. This time it was Tyler Shields coming up with the game.
So it was all about me.
Yes.
Okay.
What a cooler game than that, right?
One of the questions was what would he do if he like won a bunch of money and he'd literally like just do nothing. Nothing with it.
I would do nothing.
He'd just sit on literally his couch nothing. And literally do nothing with the millions of money that he just
However, I am married and I'd be married for 20 years this October and my wife will never let that happen. We'll be on the road, we'll be traveling, I guarantee it. So let's hear about the Would You Rather travel edition game.
All righty. So this is all sorts of travel, not just like traveling around the world, but like travel in the biggest sense. So if time were not an issue.
Can we just answer one at a time, or how do you do this?
Yeah, we'll just answer one at a time. I'd love to hear from Chrissy first because, you know, Tyler, I talk to you every day. So.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. If time weren't an issue, would you rather travel by ship, by train, or by plane?
Ooh, by train.
Really? Mm-hmm. Why is that?
So I enjoy trains a lot. I love when you can like look at the scenery. It goes places where you can't get by car or by foot. And like we're going on a train to Glenwood in October.
Oh.
From Denver. And it'll be in October when all the leaves are changing. And like it's just like territory that you just can't get to that easily unless you're on a train. And you know, my kids love trains and yeah,
that's awesome.
I traveled all over Europe on a train. I just think it's a great mode of transportation. And time's not an issue. So.
Yes. Tyler, what about you?
Depends. If the airplane is private or first class, I would take that over any of the above because I would just want to get there as fast as possible in comfort. Mm-hmm. But if it was cattle class versus a train, I'd probably take the train because it is much more comfortable and relaxing and fun. Mm-hmm.
Scenic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'd agree. I'm on the train also.
Oh, cool. Wow.
That's actually like one of the things when I travel to like Chicago, New York, right? Like I love being able to just take the public transportation. It's just different.
Give me the front of that airplane as fast as possible.
All right. Next question. Would you rather travel 20 years into the past or 20 years into the future?
Ooh, the future. I can't wait for the innovation that's going to happen in 20 years from now. I love, love, love innovation. I kind of wish, like, I know I said I'm not a movie person at some point, but I do like Back to the Future, which.
Oh, you seem to like a lot of movies. Like,
I know, really. Right? It's weird. But I do like the Back to the Future where they, you know, are in the future. But what's weird about that is that that date has already passed.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not have that. Like some of those cool things that they promised.
Yeah. Tell
Again, I have to caveat it. If I know what I know now and I can remember what I know now, I'd rather go in the past because I can use all that knowledge throughout 20 years to do literally anything I want.
It's true.
But if I didn't, like if you wipe my brain and I had to go 20 forward or back, I'd go forward because it'd be kind of cool. Actually, maybe not. After the last 2 years, I don't want to go 20 years forward because it could be who knows how down the into the dumps it goes. Maybe let's just relive the last 20 because they've been fantastic for me.
It's true. Yeah. Okay. It is depressing.
I'm a depressing person. I go dark. What can I say?
Thank you, Tyler. I think I would want to see where we're at in 20 years. So I think I'd want to go 20 years in the future also. Just how the world works. If it's post-apocalyptic, if we're in the Hunger Games, we're in the Hunger Games. So, yes. Okay.
But if we're living on planet and stuff like that, if we're like splitting time between another planet, like that'd be cool.
Yes. Super cool. Okay. Would you rather travel in a tiny house or a camper van?
Aren't they the same thing? They're different.
Travel in a tiny house? Yeah, what's that? What's a tiny house? Or how do you travel in a tiny house?
How do you travel in a tiny house? That's an excellent point.
This is a good question.
Throw that one out.
Okay, I'm tossing this one. That one didn't make sense. Sorry. Didn't think that one. Okay. Would you rather travel for 5 years in an RV or travel 5 years in a sailboat?
Ooh. It's a tough one.
Oof,
is it like Machine Gun Kelly size tour bus RV?
However big you want.
Yeah, I'm going that way all day long. All day long with like bunks and all day long. Living in luxury.
And do I have to work? No, is this just
this is like
work is optional world. in our fantasy land.
Yes.
Then I'd go on a sailboat.
Would be kind of cool.
Yeah,
Till you realize you get ocean sickness, seasickness.
Mm-hmm.
But then I get to go like travel so much farther.
Are you on the boat too, Ash?
Well, I would do a sailboat. Sorry. What I'm saying is, yes. I mean, I Chrissy, if you'd have me, I'd love to travel with you.
No, but, yeah. That's not what I was asking. I was saying, are you picking the boat?
Yes, I'm definitely on the boat.
But you said you get to travel further, but who cares? It's further into nothingness.
No, but you get to go like to other countries. If you're stuck in an RV, how do you get to another country? Mm. You're stuck to the continent.
You put your RV on a boat.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Because money's no issue at this point, too. You're right.
All right. One more question. One more.
All right. Okay. Would you rather have unlimited free food at any restaurant for the rest of your life or unlimited free flights anywhere for the rest of your life?
Ooh. Is it unlimited one restaurant?
Flights.
Any restaurant.
Right, but is it one restaurant or all restaurants?
It just says at any restaurant, so I'm going to say at all restaurants. Okay. That's the call that I would
make. Go ahead, Chrissy. I'll let you answer.
I'm flights.
Why?
Because, like, I love to travel. I love it. Like, I also love food. I am foodie Chrissy, but I'll pay for good food, and it seems less expensive than flights anywhere I want at any point that I want to view, to go see other places.
All right. Yeah, I think I would have to say flights too. But I have a follow-on question after we're done with this one. I would definitely say flights just for the same exact reason. I get around to check out some places, but I don't want to travel anyways. I don't know. Maybe it's food.
Yeah, you're the one who wants to just sit on your couch. So wouldn't you just DoorDash everywhere?
Yeah, but I would want to go back and forth to like two different places that I really like. So those flights would help to be free.
Where is this place?
Oh, that's irrelevant. Don't worry about it. Go ahead, Ashley. What's your answer?
Oh, my answer would also probably be flights. I mean, I love food. So, but yeah, I think flights would be awesome. Because then I could just hop on a plane, go to Japan, get me some ramen, and then, you know, hop on over to the next spot and get me some, like, good street food. I don't know. Like, there's just a lot of things that you could do and eat.
All right. I have a follow-on question I want to ask Chrissy because she is a self-proclaimed foodie. let's wrap up this Q&A. It's not a would you rather, but I do want to know, what's the best restaurant you have ever eaten at?
Oh, ever eaten at.
Ever. And then the corollary follow-on question to that can you tell me the best restaurant you've ever eaten in Vegas? Because that's where I'm going next week and would love to know what you recommend.
Okay. So the best restaurant I've ever eaten at that pops in my mind immediately is the Inn at Little Washington.
And where's that?
Where did you get there?
Little Washington?
It's in Virginia.
Okay.
I think it's a Michelin restaurant. And I got to eat dinner in the kitchen and watch them all like make the food and such. And it just was like, it was dynamite.
You got to love those chef table, kitchen table experiences. Those are super fun. Yeah. All right, give me your best place to eat in Vegas so I can try to get there next week.
Reservation's probably already booked.
I know. So, well, I'm going to Hell's Kitchen, which I've heard is awesome, and I really like Gordon Ramsay. I've heard that's good. Strip steak is good. There's a sushi place inside of Mandalay. It's called like... Man, I can't remember what it's called. It's like right across from the noodle shop that's in there. It's really good too. It's like starts with a K, I think, like Kumi or
yes, that. It's Kumi.
Yeah, it's Kumi. Yeah, so good. Yeah, those are my favorite places. I mean, In-N-Out is always a
now we know what your tastes are like. Okay, I'm discounting everything you just said.
Oh, you don't like In-N-Out?
I like In-N-Out, but I am definitely discounting everything else you just said on the back of that. All right.
We just In-N-Out here, and so I'm like pretty pumped.
Yeah, I've been to an In-N-Out drive-thrus in limos before many times. So, yeah, I know that In-N-Out experience at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning in Vegas, it can tend to be a good one.
You got it.
Literally, when the one opened up by the mall, my husband has been there probably at least once a week.
Oh yeah.
It's a bad sign. Like, he understands he's got a problem, but he's like, you know what? I work out. It's fine. Like, I love you now. So
yeah. Yeah.
All right. I think that brings us to the end of the game. I think that brings mm-hmm. us to the end of the show, unless there's any questions or anybody want to bring up any topics before we punt this one off. Ash, you good? Chrissy, you good?
All right. Good. This well, is fun, guys. You guys are fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining our show, Chrissy.
I'll see you next week.
Yes, definitely. I will. I'm going to talk to you after we get off air here and figure out where we can get together next week for a drink or something. So, all right. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed the conversation. I don't feel like kicking you off, but I got to. It's something I have to do. So get the hell off my show. All right. Miss Ashley.
She's great.
She's fantastic. She's fantastic. So smart. Uh-huh. So cool. Uh-huh. I definitely am going to try to get some time on her calendar next week and hang out, and maybe we'll get some food at Kumi or something, depending on what's going on next week. But anyways, awesome show. Why don't you give us a lowdown on what the next couple of weeks of episodes look like? Do we have anything going on in Vegas?
Sure. So in Vegas, we will be live. I will be doing my live. So if you don't know my handle on Instagram or Instagram and Twitter, it's Ash Cash N. So A-S-H-C-A-S-H-N. You can follow me there and follow the experience of my first full or mostly full week at Hacker Summer Camp. So I'll probably go live a few times during the week because I know you are looking forward to that, Tyler.
Absolutely.
But we will also have plenty of footage. Tyler Peterson, who's in the back room right now, he's going to be coming around with me to do some video stuff. So we'll definitely have some recap videos as well as, you know, some fun stuff going on. We've got a Plinko board. We also have a photo booth. So if you're going, definitely swing by our booth. We've got a photo booth opportunity, props and everything. It's a rocket ship because we were into the space theme. So definitely swing by, get your pins as well. So
the pins are super cool. I usually am not a swag person. I stopped picking up swag 10, 15 years ago. The pins are really cool, but you do have to earn them. So swing by the booth and figure out what you have to do to earn these really awesome Jupiter One pins that you can pick up a collection of four. So with that, Ash, I'll see you on Monday or Tuesday, whenever you get there.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thank you, everyone.